Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. Podcast 534 is going to be this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 38. And I am almost to Sturgis. I'm at the first stop for Sturgis, usually, which, of course, is the Black Hills Harley-Davidson, which is right here by in Rapid City, or the Rapid City Harley. And I'm here to visit my friends Ciro, and I'm parked way down here in some kind of trucking company parking lot where I parked last year, and there was no fence, and now there's a fence. But they do have an opening into the dealership, so that's pretty cool. And the engine is racing and charging. So this is an interesting radio show this week because I did it live from Wall, South Dakota, and you'll hear that. A little bit of new information on the controversy with the Tea Party and the guy in Elk River that is coming up. So let's just roll it. Let's go to segment one, this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, just to tell you again what it is. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show, and as you may have figured out, we're not in the studio. We are on the road on our way to Sturgis, South Dakota for the big motorcycle rally for 2016, so I've exchanged planes for motorcycles, but we're not quite in Sturgis yet. I am actually broadcasting live from Wall, South Dakota, right outside the famous Wall Drug. And already people are rolling in to head out to Sturgis, and they're stopping in to see Wall Drug. So this is a sight to see here, South Dakota, a long way from the hustings, the media, and the chaos of one of the strangest political campaigns for president, I think, in U.S. history. First, we had a primary season, which seemingly included anyone and everyone who wanted to running for the Republican nomination for president. Then you had Donald Trump emerge from the primary cage match with enough delegates to force the establishment to embrace him and thus snatch the nomination of the Republicans for president at Cleveland. Then on the Democrat side, a Vermont senator attacked Hillary Clinton, won primary elections, and took caucuses, but never threatened the former First Lady, New York Senator, and Secretary of State because the Democrat establishment superdelegates remain committed to her. In both mainline parties, the bottom line, the big story coming out of all of these conventions is that the establishment maintained control. The establishment won. And so now the campaigning begins. For the Democrats, they have supposedly come out of their convention united, while Republicans, on the surface and self-evidently, remain divided over the candidacy of Trump, especially after Trump went after the wife of a speaker at the DNC, the parent of a fallen army captain who also happened to be Muslims. Now, incumbent Republicans for Congress and the Senate have to defend their previous endorsements of Trump, while the Republican leadership is fuming at the possibility that Trump's supposed missteps are going to mean a Democrat takeover of the Senate and the loss of several Republican House seats in 2016. Remember, I told you Republicans are on the defensive in 2016 as it pertains to the Senate because they've got some very tight races. There are still continuing to be rumors that the GOP is considering dumping Trump, although he would have to bow out. As the media raves about the Democrat convention's look, its smoothness, its presentation, and the speakers, not much is being reported about the fury of the Bernie Sanders supporters and the impact of Debbie Wasserman Schultz's manipulation of the process as DNC chair, or really even that she landed on her feet and is now working for the Hillary Clinton campaign for president after she was forced out as DNC chair. And yet another tranche of emails is about to be released from WikiLeaks. Is it? Once again, the Republican candidate has been tried in the court of the media, found guilty, and sentenced? Or is it simply that the Republican candidate is a loose cannon drawing attention as a whirling dervish, someone who doesn't think before he speaks and cannot be disciplined enough to not only win the presidency, but to do his duty as the party leader and ensure that his party retains control of the Senate and the House in this critical election year? Well, only you can make that determination. To that end, in this show, I'm going to talk about some people right now that I would consider low information voters. Those are just getting engaged in the politics after the conventions, sending me emails and asking me, who should I vote for? And the answer I am giving them is not the answer they want to hear. Increasingly, people want to be told who to vote for and why. They want someone else to make the arguments and someone to tell them what they should think. Now, throughout this campaign, I've warned about this. I have decried the lack of interest in details on policy by the American people in particular, but the media is to blame, too, for reporting, for example, whether somebody wore a spaghetti strap dress and, you know, whether they should have on TV when they should be informing people on the economy, social issues, trade, foreign policy, at least enough so that voters can have command of the contours of these issues, at least enough for them to make an informed decision. But that assumes people actually want to hear that information. And so here we are. A choice between a manipulative political operator and her husband. Forget Mrs. Clinton's choice of vice president. Bill Clinton is going to be the de facto vice president if she is elected. And an unpredictable real estate developer who cut his teeth on government subsidies, a self-professed trade protectionist, and somebody who's already said that he's going to spend more than Hillary Clinton on government stimulus, while Clinton has pledged to spend more, I'm sorry, borrow more, tax more, and spend more than Barack Obama, whose government intervention and record of regulation, executive orders, and government involvement in the economy has netted him the title of being the only president in U.S. history to have not broken 3% growth for any of the nearly 8 years that he has been president. So that's what the political situation is. A guy who says he's a conservative says he's going to spend more than Hillary Clinton. You know, and we're talking about spaghetti dresses on national television. Has the system failed us, or have we failed the system? You're going to have to answer that question as well, because one of these choices is going to be president. And you can forget the libertarians or anybody else. They won't poll enough to win the presidency, even if they get into the debate. So in this installment of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, I have a two-part answer for those who ask me who they should vote for and why. And the first involves the media and why I've changed how I communicate on politics. And the second involves the candidates, the challenges of the future, and why we may not be up to it. And so the political system isn't up to it either. So that's the national political picture. And I have to add that for all the talk about dumping Trump and for all of the frustration that we're hearing about from the national Republican Party, the Republicans chose him to be the nominee. They wanted Trump. He won, you know, a lion's share of the delegates. If you compare all 17 of the people that he ran against, he beat them and he got people to vote for him in primaries. So does he reflect the Republican Party or not? And I think that's a huge question right now. But he was chosen by the Republicans to be the candidate. And Hillary Clinton was chosen by the Democrats to be the candidate. They're terrible candidates. But nonetheless, they were chosen to carry the standard. But all of us, no matter where we live, are in the middle of local elections, state house and Senate races, and so forth. And sometimes these local elections can get dirty. So in this show, one of those stories. Now, this story happens to be from Minnesota, but it could really be anywhere in the United States. They happen all the time, and sometimes they're fascinating. And there's going to be a number of disclaimers associated with this. I'm not sure I'll have time in the final segment of this show to actually lay it out as far as disclaimers are concerned. But there's been a charge leveled by a local Elk River, Minnesota man that the Tea Party in his area is breaking campaign finance law right before the August 9th primary. I have been trying to run down this story, trying to run down the charges, trying to determine whether the evidence supports the charges, and it's going to take a while before the state can respond, and of course there's a primary on August 9th, so we got to ask the question, is this dirty politics or perhaps the truth? We're going to find out, maybe. This is what you're going to be hearing a lot as we head to Sturgis, for sure. So coming up, people keep asking me who they should vote for and why. And I'm going to share what I tell them with you and why. And a lot of people aren't going to like it. Next. I love Sturgis. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcast, go to thebobdavispodcast.com. To hear more episodes of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, you can visit gcnlive.com or visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Live from Wall, South Dakota, just outside of Wall Drug, heading out to Sturgis. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. So one of the things that you're going to hear while you're here is the roar of motorcycles. We're going to be hearing a lot of a roar of motorcycles for the rest of the podcast from the Black Hills, Deadwood, Sturgis, et al. Let me turn the engine off so you guys can hear we can have the roar of the motorcycles in the background. Okay? Perfect. So I'm hearing a lot of advertisements these days for air conditioning service. I'm hearing that a lot. And I want to remind everybody that Ryan Plumbing and Heating has been offering air conditioning checks since the beginning of summer. If you haven't had your air conditioning checked, you know, if you haven't done it, I mean, we're almost a state fair. I hate to say those words, but we are almost a state fair. So really, we should be talking about heating checks to get things ready. But it's a little yet in the middle of summer for that. But yes, Ryan Plumbing and Heating can do an AC check for you. Call them and ask about that. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide, that means that they can get a plumber to you, regardless of where you are in the Twin Cities metro, suburbs, or the cities. But really, I want to talk about business, and I want to talk about business service, and I want to talk specifically about business emergency service with Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They've been around for four generations on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol. Here's the deal. If you run a business, a lot of times if you have a plumbing emergency, you got to have some help, and you need help right now, or you're going to have to close your doors. And that includes AC, includes heating, it includes air conditioning, as I said, and plumbing issues. So if you have an emergency problem, Ryan Plumbing and Heating does great emergency service. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. And they do a lot of business service as well. So for business, remember Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, 651-224-4771. That's 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Check them out also at ryanplumbing.com, the all-new ryanplumbing.com website. Lots of content on there and ways to contact Ryan Plumbing. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Okay. Here is segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, number 38, live from Wall, South Dakota, just outside of the Wall Drug Store. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Welcome back. I'm on the road to the big motorcycle rally in Sturgis in Wall, South Dakota, just outside the famous Wall Drug here. Basically, wherever I am every week, I pull over and do the radio show. And I happen to pull over in Wall, South Dakota, right by Wall Drug. Gotta go in and get some ice cream when I'm done here. As both mainline party conventions come to a close over the last 2 weeks, suddenly now people want to know who to vote for. And people are emailing me and calling me and texting me, and they ask me to tell them what I would do, what they should do, and who they should vote for. If only it were that easy. We have an oversupply of political content and an undersupply of actual information. Now, I may not be able to change that reality, but I can change the way I communicate and the way I talk about politics. Here's why. I have distanced myself from the partisan political process because I find it highly distasteful and very uninformative. If you look at the Twitter feed, if you look at the Facebook feed, it's really bad. It's very bad. And the information people are getting is very bad. And the chief problem with all of it is that we're dealing with some complicated issues in the American situation in the world. We're dealing with foreign policy. We're dealing with trade issues. And so, therefore, foreign policy and trade issues. We're dealing with economic issues. We're dealing with social issues. And we're dealing with issues that demand a little bit more knowledge of the contours, as I like to call it, of those issues than most people are aware of. And it's becoming obvious to me that we're not getting any more well-informed. And I'll tell you when it started for me. It started on the campaign trail for me when I went out and I said earlier this year in February, I'm going to go out and cover these presidential candidates. And my intention was to cover some Democrat events as well as some Republican events. And it just didn't work out that I covered any Democrat events. And I feel bad about that because I'm not a Democrat. I don't agree with Democrats politically, but I felt that I should have covered some, especially a Bernie Sanders event, for obvious reasons. And I ended up covering all the Republicans. I got to an event for virtually all of the Republicans, but I never got to a Libertarian event, and I never got to a Democrat event. And after Iowa, and if you listen to the podcast that I did from Iowa, if you're really interested in what I think, you really should listen to the primary coverage, because once you cover the primaries and the way that they were treated by the media, they were covered like sports, and the political situation is still being covered like sports, and not very good coverage of sports. You could replace the names of the major political parties and the names of the candidates with the names of teams vying for the World Series crown, or whatever you want to call it, or the Final Four, and it would be the same coverage. It would look the same, it would feel the same, and it would be just as speculative about who's going to win. In fact, I would say that sports is probably a little bit more rooted in fact than politics. I became very disillusioned with the political process. I was disillusioned with it to begin with, but I really, the final nail was driven into the coffin on the, when you see what the media does and what these politicians do when you're up close, when they are up close and personal and you're standing 5 feet from them and you see their supporters and you see the same people showing up to different events for different candidates and you see them waving the signs and everything else and you realize that the whole thing is about television. It's all about creating an event that will be televised. It's all about creating an event someone's going to write about. And this is what the journalists, and I use that quote, I use the term journalist lightly, and I said this in several of the podcasts. I don't really want to even repeat it, but I need to tell you, if you want to know what I think, I need to tell you why I think what I think. Their idea of journalism is to go stand outside and talk to people who are coming out of the event and ask them and get quotes from them. And if I saw it once, I saw it 100 times. this horde of reporters that turn the cameras on or stand in front of people who don't know anything because they're watching television, so they don't know anything, and asking them what they think Ted Cruz is all about, or what they think John Kasich is all about, or what they think is going to happen in the presidential election. And then that's filled out by a writer somewhere, whether it's New York or Washington or Los Angeles, and that serves as a newspaper article. Sometimes they go a little deeper, where they will hang with the campaign for a while, and it's still really the same thing, but it's just a longer period of time that they spend talking to people, and maybe they have additional sources. And then you get into the people who have been around for a while and, you know, can say, you know, this is how this compares to last year and so forth. And that's what serves as the written component of political coverage. And then then you get into the stories that come out. And if you try to look at reliable sources, you'll see that almost all of the internet news services are rewritten stories from somewhere else. So what are they doing? Well, they're doing what I'm doing. They're doing what I've been doing for years, which is reading 6 or 7 newspapers or printing 200 or 300 pages of material every day from news sources and reading them and basically repackaging them. And I realized when I watched the mainstream media doing it, when I watch the non-mainstream media doing it, when I see that happening with websites that you wouldn't think that that's what they do, that's kind of when I realized that the whole thing, I don't want to say it's for show, it's just we don't have a media that's actually covering the issues. And if you're a quote-unquote low-information voter, in other words, if you've just started paying attention and you said, you know, what do you think and what should I do? My advice is there's nothing that you can do. You have an entire population which has been aroused consistently by the media. They've been heated up by the media over and over and over again, and they've lost the ability to reason. They don't know where to get information. They don't want to look up information and assemble it and examine it so they have a full understanding of the issue. Very few people do that. What they do is they watch Fox News straight for 24 hours all the time, and that serves as their information. Or they watch conspiracy theory videos on YouTube, and that serves as their information. They have lots of detail based on that stuff. But when it comes to immigration, when it comes to economics, when it comes to military, when it comes to foreign policy, when it comes to trade, they really don't understand the contours of the issue. Well, Bob Davis, then what do you tell people who ask you who to vote for? Well, I'm going to share it with you, but I'm not promising that you're going to like it. Next. For more of the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Live from Wall, South Dakota, this is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. I'm live from Black Hills Harley-Davidson, or I call it the Rapid City Harley-Davidson. You can hear the roar of the cycles in the background as we get close to Sturgis. So yeah, for this weekend, a lot of plans. I'm going to go to Deadwood, and I'll tell you more about that in future podcasts, but that's going to be pretty cool. And I'll visit Sturgis as well. But for many people, this Harley-Davidson dealership right here in Rapid City, right after, it's pretty much the last exit as you roll through Rapid City. This is the first visit, and I'm here with my friends from Ciro, and they're doing all kinds of motorcycle parts and service and things of that nature. And that's really cool. So they're right here. They've got a big truck here along with lots and lots and lots of other companies. This is quite an event here. The other thing about this particular weekend is that last year was an anniversary motorcycle rally. This one is just more of a normal Sturgis, if such a thing exists. So there's that. But I just wanted to mention that. So this will be a little bit more manageable and and maybe we'll get a real good flavor of what this motorcycle rally is all about in the next few days here. And just ahead of segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, remember, pilots, I learned a lot about lift and angle of attack and general aviation safety at EAA. And one of the biggest problems in general aviation, there's about 150,000 civilian pilots, you know, general aviation in this country. And a lot of them don't understand the need for an AOA or an angle of attack indicator. Alpha Systems really pioneered angle of attack for general aviation. They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator because they make an AOA with a tremendous visual display. So you have a visual display of your lift, your angle of attack as you make that final turn to land, and that means safety. And of course, that's really important because pilots want to get there, but they want to get there safely. Go to the BobDavisPodcast.com, click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the BobDavisPodcast.com. I had a great time with you guys at EAA. Just remember Alpha Systems, because if we could make an improvement, and this is what they say at Alpha, if we could see an improvement in that single issue in general aviation, it would save a lot of lives, and it has saved lives. So if you visit the Alpha Systems website, you're going to see information about how it has saved lives. And as I said in one of the other commercials for Alpha, there were two guys talking about it right there at the Alpha Systems booth at EAA, and they were talking about a friend of theirs. And they said if he had had this, he would have lived, because what happened is that he lost lift and tried to turn around and crashed. So I'm not an aviator, so I don't know all the details. But I, as I said, I learned a lot about this particular system at EAA. Anyway, I've gone on much too long about the things that I've learned in my various travels. Here is segment three. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of this show, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. To hear more of the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. So we're live in Wall, South Dakota, right near the Wall Drug, the famous Wall Drug. And I believe the American political season in election years is too long and too much like sports. This creates an incestuous relationship between politicians and the media and leaves most Americans deeply uninformed on the issues. The result is predictable. The two worst possible candidates for president and a slew of other losers who will garner fractions of a percentage of the vote. Who should you vote for? You may not like the answer. This is a choice between the two worst possible candidates that we could possibly have chosen in this election. I don't think Donald Trump reflects anything other than the complete moral failure of the Republican establishment to find a candidate that is able to bridge the different groups of Republicans, the so-called religious right, the libertarian, and the so-called mainstream moderate Republican tents within the big tent that is the Republican Party. Donald Trump is a real estate mogul who became a real estate mogul based on subsidized or regulated real estate deals in the city of New York. He is not a conservative. He is not Ronald Reagan. And he is also a trade protectionist. And you can fill in the blank on the other stuff. Those things bear no relationship to the Republican Party that has, you know, that produced Ronald Reagan, who was a free trader and who was leaned more to the libertarian side in terms of economics and in terms of, you know, government and how government relates to the people of this country. Donald Trump is more Nixon-ish than he is Reagan-ish in the sense that he says he's going to make the government work better. He's going to make America great again. And that's exactly what President Obama said. So both guys are essentially statists from that point of view. And it's very hard for people who have become so partisanized that they're just supporting their guy, that the response is not an argument. It's not to say, well, no, here's the reason why he's not a statist, because you can't prove that he isn't. It's to say, well, do you want Hillary Clinton to be president? And then on the Democrat side, The Hillary Clinton is not a reflection on any level of the Democratic voter today, for the most part. Democratic voters today believe we should do good things with the government. Democratic voters today believe we should have cradle-to-grave health care, that we should have minimum incomes, minimum wages, and that we should tax rich people to provide it. In fact, they agree more with Bernie Sanders as a whole than they do with Hillary Clinton. This is a year in which Wall Street is backing Hillary Clinton, and she carries the Democrat standard. So this is a very odd election from that respect, because, in fact, the Republican establishment is almost the same as the Democrat establishment. So we do have sort of uniparty. Is it going to be a disaster if Hillary Clinton is elected? Is it going to be a disaster if Donald Trump is elected? Well, it depends on what you consider to be a disaster, really. Really, what is amazing to me is that no one is talking about Congress. Nobody's talking about the Senate. Nobody's talking about the House and the makeup of the House and the makeup of the Senate, not in terms of political party, but in terms of orientation, in terms of how they believe that things should be governed. And what you have is a very much establishment Republican Congress, which is terrified of the Democratic Party and of the Democrat left-wing movement in this country, and will pretty much compromise with the Democrats no matter what. And you have a very thin Republican majority in the Senate, which is going to be tough for them to defend under Donald Trump. And the only reason that the establishment endorsed Trump was because they wanted to protect the Senate in particular, and they thought that a huge fight on the floor at the convention would hurt their chances to maintain the Senate. And so they made a Faustian bargain with Donald Trump in an effort to cauterize the damage dissent would have. And the Democrats have pretty much done the same thing. The establishment has thrown their support behind Hillary Clinton, who is an anathema to the people who have supported Bernie Sanders, in an effort to cauterize the dissent and present a united front. What do I think, and who do I think you should vote for? Well, first of all, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, and I'm not going to endorse a candidate, really any candidate. I certainly have friends running for Congress, three friends running for Congress. I like my friends, but I wouldn't suggest to you that you vote for my friends. You vote for whoever you think you need to vote for. Same thing with the House races in Minnesota, where I live and where you are. You need to do what you need to do to make yourself happy. And if you want to vote for Jill Stein, you're a Republican, go for it. If you want to vote for a Libertarian, go for it. If you want to vote for Trump, if you want to vote for Clinton, do whatever you got to do. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I think there is a surfeit of political talk and commentary, and not much real information. There's a whole part of this country of human beings who are doing things and working together, who are Republican and Democrat, left and right, who are not thinking about that stuff. They're pouring concrete, or they are working on their house, or they are going to Sturgis, or they are going to the air show. And there is a part of America that is optimistic, and there is a part of America that is going to persevere regardless of what happens in November, this November, or maybe even November 4 years from now, certainly November 2 years from now. There is a whole portion of America which goes on completely ignoring the government. And I believe that as we continue down the road, you will see more and more Americans basically ignore the government, because we are asking the government to do too many things, and the government is incompetent. Our government is incompetent. We are on the cusp of a great age in which the tools that we have at our disposal will only get more powerful, whether you want to say it's AI, whether you want to say it's robotics, IT, digital media, digital communications, and everything else. We are on the edge of a great age. I've talked about it. I've done podcasts about it. It's very hard to get that through people's heads. They don't realize the extent to which we have moved forward in time, and they don't understand the extent to which we have built up this technology revolution in this country. It is only going to gather steam, and as it does, it's going to bring into being a new world. And there are a lot of people resisting it. And there's a lot of people who are going to be disenfranchised by these technological changes because they don't know how to use the tools that they've been given. There's a lot of people who are in, you know, in their 60s and 70s who are done with their working years and they just don't understand it. And I think people really struggle with the reality that some of these technologies enable. So the government's real good at covering its ass, but it's not real good at solving problems. Problems are going forward. So when I say a clarifying event, it's a big enough event that the people wake up and force the issue. And I don't think people are awake. I think people are very angry because they've been fed a steady diet of outrage and anger, especially on the right, for the last 8 years, and they've lost their connection to reason. People are terrified of things that maybe if they knew more about them, they wouldn't be terrified of them, or we would be able to find some solution that worked. But instead, what you get are people who are really, really furious and angry and scared, and they don't want to talk about it. They just want somebody to fix it. Hence, you get Hillary Clinton and you get Donald Trump. Clinton will never tell you what she's going to do. She's absolutely opaque, not transparent. She's the antithesis of transparency. And Donald Trump has no idea what he's going to do. And you don't either.
A lot of focus on the media in national politics, but local politics can be pretty dirty, too. Coming up. Live from Wall, South Dakota, things are starting to quiet down now because the sun is going down. Just down the block from the famous Wall Drug, this is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
Okay, just ahead of segment four, I'm getting ready to go in there and get me one of those hot dogs that I can smell them over here. I am live in Rapid City, South Dakota, just outside the Black Hills Harley-Davidson dealership, which is the first stop for a lot of folks heading out to Sturgis. And I'll be going to Deadwood and Sturgis this weekend, so that should be pretty fun. I'm looking forward to the podcast this weekend. Once again, remember, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for business service, emergency service, and business service in general. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, they're on University Avenue. They've been there for four generations. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, and thank you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Also, thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. Thanks for listening to the radio show on AM 1280 The Patriot in Minneapolis at 4 p.m. on Sundays, and more affiliates as we get them, starting to work on that. And I'm going to have an announcement basically on an additional wrinkle of service of the Bob Davis Podcast that is coming up. Thank you for donating and liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and donating again at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Two things. If you go to thebobdavispodcast.com and you look just below that, you know, sort of profile picture at the top and the ads, you're going to see a sign up form for the Bob Davis Podcast's newsletter called The Bob Line. That is the first issue. It'll be coming out sometime in August. And you can sign up for that. And then just below that is the donate button for donating to Mobile Podcast Command. And I appreciate the donations, whatever they are, for diesel fuel and coffee and beef jerky from Trader Joe's, which is the best beef jerky. So really appreciate the donations for that. And thanks for listening again on Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, and for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter. All right, segment four is coming up. A couple of things very quickly, and I say it in the radio show, but I want to make sure that I get this clear. These are allegations by Matt Stevens of Elk River regarding the Tea Party playing, quote-unquote, fast and loose, and that's my quote, with the campaign finance laws. There's no proof
It's only an allegation. I am running down, and I'm having someone run down specifics, and there are some discrepancies in the allegations that Matt Stevens has leveled against the Tea Party. He doesn't cite correctly quotes and time codes on the podcasts for the Tea Party that he's saying prove quote-unquote collusion. And we're not sure if his allegations are true when you look at the actual designation of the Tea Party PACs and the Tea Party Alliance. And I need to say that because we have a Tea Party, you know, that's pretty upset. And we have a primary coming up on August 9th. And so you're going to have to draw your own conclusions about what Matt Stevens is up to, or whether you think that that his allegations are valid or not. And for the Minnesota, you know, Board of Campaign Finance and whatever it is, I sent an email out to Gary Goldsmith, who's the chair of that board, and they will not even confirm or deny that they have received a complaint. And the reason for that is then they aren't part of the political play one way or the other. So we will just have to wait and see. For the Tea Party's part, they won't comment, and for Matt Stevens' part, he won't make any more comments or talk to any more reporters until after he hears from the Minnesota Campaign Finance, whatever it is, you know, board. So, and you'll hear what it is in the podcast. But I think it's very interesting that we have a primary coming up on August 9th and no one's commenting. So I don't want to go on and on because this is not a podcast. This is just sort of the rebroadcast of the repodcast of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. So this is segment four, but those are my disclaimers. Again, these are allegations. They may or may not be true. We will not know until after the primary. So there's that. And that's just something to consider when you listen to what Matt has to say. And again, I offered the Tea Party a chance to come on and comment. They refused until after the primary as well. So there you have it. Here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show.
Davis Podcast Radio Show live from Wall, South Dakota, just near the famous Wall Drug. And this segment of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show deals with an interview with a local citizen who complained to a state board that a local Tea Party group and the PAC associated with it, or the PACs associated with it, are violating campaign finance law in their support of a candidate challenging Minnesota's Speaker of the House in an August 9th primary. I have to say that these are allegations. I have been checking it out, and nothing has been proven. These are the opinions of the interviewee that I'm going to talk to here, Matthew Stevens of Elk River. I'm working now, as I said, to determine the veracity of these charges. Here's the thing. The Tea Party people involved refuse to comment. On social media, they say Stevens is a small man seeking to derail the challenge to the speaker, and he, for his part, won't do any more interviews until the board speaks. And yet we have a primary August 9th. Draw your own conclusions.
Why don't you define what it is that you tweeted and the complaint that you filed with the state?
So I filed a complaint with the Campaign Finance Board alleging that some independent expenditures were not so independent related to the Duff campaign. The opponent or the incumbent is Kurt Dowd on the Republican side. But what's really happened here is this: there's a new leadership pack. The North Metro Tea Party has this group, Liberty for Action, and they're all kind of in bed with each other. And I mean, it's pretty darn obvious that there's some collusion going there. Not only because people are sitting on, as the president of one group or the treasurer of another group, and then are an advisor to a campaign in Jack Duesenberg's case, where he's president of that Liberty for Action, and then he's an advisor to the candidate. Well, I mean, how can he have an independent?
Apparently, that's unofficial, though. That's an unofficial thing, supposedly. I mean, I'm not debating, but I'm just wondering if that has a legal implication.
Well, that's for the campaign finance board to sort out. When they're talking about action of the campaign or of these independent expenditures, Jack and Jake always refer to it as we. It's never they did this or this group is doing this. It's we did this. You can kind of see where their mind is at before they actually got called out on it.
So what are they not allowed to do? How are they violating? And because I'm, you know, I wouldn't even begin to tell you, you know, I'm not certainly no authority on the vagaries of campaign finance. What statutes are they violating here?
I don't have the statutes in front of me. Those are kind of difficult to remember for the non-lawyer type. Really, what it boils down to is they, if a group is going to do an independent expenditure, they can't coordinate it with the campaign, and that's happening several different ways. With Jack's relationship with the campaign, or I'm sorry, Jake's relationship with the campaign, and then with the owner of Beanie Graphics, who's also the treasurer of the Tea Party, and will need to sign off on any independent expenditures. Well, as the owner of this graphics company, he also knows what the campaign's doing, what their message is going to be, and he's being used, or he's fulfilling orders for the campaign, the New Leadership PAC, and the Tea Party's PAC. So, you know, it's just everybody's looking at each other's books, and they can coordinate a message pretty quickly that way.
And your evidence for that is things that they've said on their podcasts.
Yeah, yep.
So Jake tweeted tonight that it's not true? And my understanding is Jack says it's not true?
Yeah, no, they're going to deny it. Well, the campaign finance board has to take it up. And they'll need to at least investigate it, because the accusation is breaking specific laws, so they need to at least address that and say yes they did or no they didn't.
So what are the specific laws that they're breaking? And again, I'm not trying to get you to give me the statute, but what are they specifically doing that's illegal, that you think is illegal?
The coordination.
Okay.
And the coordination, and if the coordination is illegal, then their disclosures and their campaign finance reports are in error. It'd probably be the most polite way to say it.
Okay. Now, I have some questions for you, because people are going to, you know, I've already seen some stuff that people have said that you were one of Norm Coleman's campaign guys. Is that true?
No. I held my nose and voted for the guy, but I wasn't.
Well, you know, and this is what people are going to say. So, do you work for Kurt Dowd or anything like that?
I know him. I appreciate what he's done in leadership. I mean, I get that it's a crap job signing up to be leadership, and I appreciate what he does, but I don't even have the guy's phone number.
Well, he works for Kurt Dowd, and this is just dirty tricks before the primary. That's what they're going to say. It's not unusual in Minnesota politics for this kind of thing to happen, you know, where people who are, you know, the response is going to be, well, we're just trying to help people and we're doing good things, and this horrible person has filed this complaint and we never did anything wrong and he's working for Kurt Dowd. I mean, it's not out of the question that that's what you're going to...
That's going to be said, yeah.
So you're not involved working with Kurt Dowd or anything like that?
No. He had no idea what I was doing.
Okay. You haven't heard from him, have you?
No, hasn't reached out.
So are you a lawyer?
No, I did have some help writing it with, I started complaining about it, and then got in touch with a friend of mine who helped me with the details, and who does some legal filings work, just to help clean it up and tighten it up to make it look,
And who was that? Who was that?
Just a friend of mine. He likes to stay out of politics.
So he's not involved with Kurt Dowd or any of the people in that campaign?
No, he just... Somebody files legal briefs fairly regularly for different lawyers.
And do you have any other evidence besides the citations from the podcasts?
Just their campaign finance and the lack of any transfers or any... in-kind work done by either group or the lack of any in-kind work done on the campaign expenditures. The like you said, the podcasts where they gave their own confession. That and what got me on this originally was I had an email address set up that only the North Metro Tea Party had, and it got shared with a candidate that those guys are backing, and I asked Jack about that, and he denied that. That I'd have a tough time proving.
Right.
But that's what kind of got me hunting them a little bit. I saw what was going on with that, and that kind of got me watching this coordination and all these flyers that are coming out there. Because I have some coworkers who live up that way, and they know I'm into politics, so they keep bringing me all these flyers and that they're getting bombarded with.
You're basically alleging that there's a coordination of message between the Tea Party Alliance, the Tea Party PAC, and of course the Tea Party itself, the North Metro Tea Party, or whatever they're calling it today, is not.
Right.
It can't. They're not a campaign organization. It's supposedly for education only, right?
Well, I think they're doing it through their PAC portion, which would be a campaign arm, and then also the new leadership PAC.
Okay.
And the new leadership PAC is involved in this because they're running all of their printing and mailing through the same print office that everybody else is here, serving all those parties, and then being the treasurer for the Tea Party. It kind of de facto is coordination. There's actually a campaign finance board opinion on that. That's pretty straightforward. I think it was in the citations. You got to play by the rules here, you know.
So it yet remains to be seen whether this was an attempt to derail a candidacy and protect the speaker, or if there's any truth to the charges. Stay tuned. That's all for this week's installment of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Thanks for listening. Visit thebobdavispodcast.com and sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast Bobline newsletters. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Live from Wall, South Dakota, on the way to Sturgis 2016, this is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
Going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show repodcast of the podcast radio show on the Bob Davis Podcast. Yeah, I know it's ridiculous, but I love all these names that are so confusing. It's just really funny. But I'm going to go look at some motorcycles and hang out and eat a hot dog with my friends at Ciro, and I will get back to you in future podcasts about this weekend. Heading out to Sturgis, also Deadwood, and I'm going to hang out with some of my friends in Deadwood and talk Western history, and that should be really cool. So thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 534, live from Rapid City, South Dakota.